Well, good afternoon, KGOU listeners. This is Managing Editor Logan Layden, and we're back with another episode of the KGOU Readers Club after its holiday hiatus. And the book we're highlighting this month is Midwest Hymns. It's a book of poetry, and it comes from Dale Cottingham, who joins me over the next hour. Dale, thanks for joining me today.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you.
Yes, indeed. This is, we've done books here on the Readers Club focused on history, the history of the state capitol and how it got built and various different sort of nonfiction type of prose. And this is new territory for me. I have to say, of all the books that I've reviewed for Readers Club, this one was the shortest to read, but also the most intimidating for me to actually have a discussion about, because poetry is something, and it's a lack of intellectual curiosity on my part, I suppose, that I've never really delved into as much. But through reading Midwest Hymns, I think I've come up with more of an appreciation for poetry. I know, my mom kept, documents from when I was in elementary school, certainly wrote poems, don't remember. But it's just not something that I'm particularly familiar with. So over the course of the next hour, yes, we're going to talk about, Midwest Hymns in particular and, what I got, from the series of poems in that book, but also about poetry in general. But before we get to all of that, I want to introduce you to the listeners. So, Dale Cottingham, tell me what do you do for a living normally?
Well, I certainly don't do poetry for a living. however, I'm a lawyer. I practice water law and some energy law with Crowe Dunleavy. I'm the chair of their energy section, so that certainly keeps me busy. I'm either writing poems or I'm at work.
Well, that's it. In my current role as managing editor here at KGOU, yes, but I used to also be a reporter for the station, and my main focus with my reporting was usually related to water. It was an issue that is so important to Oklahoma, whether it was mining for limestone and sand down in South Central Oklahoma and the aquifers, or the battle over Southeast Oklahoma's water with Texas, or issues with the Illinois River watershed up in Northeast Oklahoma. That's an issue that's sort of near and dear to my heart that we could probably talk a full hour about in your context as a lawyer. Yeah. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. We're talking about Midwest Hymns. As an attorney doing your day-to-day job, why did you write this? You're an attorney and you're also a poet, is what I take away from that. Tell me how this came together. You didn't just write this book, you didn't come up with these poems just for this book. This was something over the course of a long period of time, I would have thought.
Absolutely. I got to tell you, I went to college at Oklahoma Baptist University in Shawnee. There, I took a number of courses in English literature. Was introduced to a number of poets. Some are, in the poetry circles are pretty famous, like Robert Frost, Wallace Stevens. Those are 20th century American poets. But I would also hasten to add T.S. Eliot. There are also more historical poets we've read, all the way back to Homer or some 19th century poets, Romantic poets. So I decided pretty early on that I was probably going to need to make a living. My father was a car mechanic, and so I wasn't going to inherit much. And so I decided I would pursue a legal career to do that. But all along, I've kept a journal, and it's my journaling, usually in the early in the morning, but also later on in the evening. So it's on the margins of the day, but it's the journaling that led me to write the poems. And so I started writing the poems a number of years ago, and compiled this book a few years ago, but have continued to write and have another manuscript out in circulation.
Well, yeah, and before we discuss the book sort of in specific and get too deep into it, tell us a little bit about some of the, well, this book of poetry has been well received, Midwest Hymns, award-winning, and so have you. Can you kind of sum up some of the accolades?
I appreciate that. Mm-hmm. The book is a finalist in Best Book Awards. That was an award that was, or recognition that was received, I want to say, Logan, it would have been about November last year. Mm-hmm. It takes a while for these contests to, you know, work their way through, particularly larger contests like Best Book, you know, national contests. So they had a lot of entries to look at. But I have also won the New Millennium Poem of the Year for a rather long poem. But that was in 2019. I've had a couple of poems, actually, I suppose three poems at this point, that have been anthologized. So I feel well recognized.
What inspires you to do it? Poetry.
I got to tell you, when I got to college and I first read in a serious fashion some of the poems that I read, I mentioned T.S. Eliot. Frost was one, but it's primarily Eliot. It struck a chord in me. So I began to see things, began to experience things in my life, and have reached certain conclusions about those things. But those are the things that inspire me. That's really the genesis of it, was reading, significant poems, and then, thinking about those, and then seeing in my own life inspirations.
Well, and as I went into reading Midwest Hymns, I didn't really know what to expect. It's probably the first book of poetry I've read, again, since I was a little kid. It's been decades. What I was sort of struck by was how I related to so many of them. And for this particular group of poems, a lot of people here in Oklahoma can sort of relate to them, just specifically, just like right on the surface, whether you're talking about the, I believe it was the Guaranteed In Garage Shelter, is one of the ones that's just kind of, if you've grown up in Oklahoma around your grandparents and there's been a tornado warning and you read this poem, it's sort of, you can relate to it. And there are several examples of that. I wonder, do you have at least the electronic version of the book there? I don't want to give the whole thing away, but there might be a couple of poems in here that maybe you could read for us
over. Yeah, I've got the, yeah. I have the book itself.
Okay.
So not just electronic, I have the book itself. Yeah. So are you thinking some of the shorter poems or?
We got a whole hour here. It seems like at least a couple of them. And I think it's on page 23. It's one of the earlier ones. Family Photo, but there's another one also as well. Seems like some of the poems here come from your own, maybe you're just looking at a picture that's in some sort of album or in some sort of box or something like that, and sort of interpreting it and sort of putting your own sort of thoughts into what might have been going on in that little moment that was captured in time. So I think Family Photo is one that we would like to hear that was early
okay.
in the book. Yes.
Yep. Let me read this poem, then I can talk a little bit about it. Family photo. We stand in front of the porch, dressed in t-shirts, jeans, some in boots, as straight for the lens as each can manage. I'm held by a cousin, Jack, who'd returned from Vietnam a decade later, a recluse, who is next to Bruce, disappeared, also a decade later, turning up as a waiter in New Orleans, after exiling himself to Canada to avoid the draft, next to Paul, a backhoe operator who died of heart failure in 2013. None of us knew any of this was coming, or that the infant, one of the 22 relations pictured, would be born into a vast plain of words searching its grasses for seeds in chaff while fate ticks off his remaining minutes.
That comes from a photo of
it does.
Your family.
There's a family photo of Cottingham's in, of all places, Powell, Oklahoma, which is a little town. Actually, it's outside of Powell, a little town between Poto and Heber. And so it was a family get together. It was, it was 1957. So this was the year after I was born. It was just a family photo. And it was something that my parents had. And so I have it now.
And, you know, there's another example that I think later in the book there that comes from another, basically just a photo of my father, right?
Yes.
And that's on page 55, which is another, it appears to me at least, your interpretation, you're taking this photo and you're writing a poem about it, and sort of interpreting what might be going on around that photo being taken. If you could read that for us as well, that'd be great.
Yeah, let me read that.
Yeah.
Photo of my father, Kansas City, 1946. The sun shines on him as he walks, his face lit with his future. The narrow storefronts, glass reflecting his back, like an open door. The deep Pacific, the ships pitch and roll from silent currents in the unfathomed sea that mark his stance, are not before him anymore, nor the Petty Jane farms mean hopes. I wonder who took the photo. A woman lost to memory? I never asked. He never said. Such are the borders between fathers and sons of the unspoken. We are told the poem must show, not say, and I sometimes believe that. Show me the path, the gate. Show me how it opens.
And again, an interpretation of a photo that you have from a relative of yours, what might have been going on in that time. But I also see a little bit of, and this is hinted at in some of the poems as well, as I sort of struggle to appreciate poetry and understand it better. We see you, I think, trying to do the same in some of these. We're told the poem must show, not say. You're trying to, there are rules around poetry.
Let me talk a little bit about that. This poem does come from a photo of my father, who was a veteran of World War II. He was in the Navy. And so there's a photo of him in 1946, and he's in Kansas City. He's got his sailor suit on. And so, I begin to ask him, I describe the photo, and then I begin to ask questions. Well, I wonder who took the picture. These questions that a grown adult might ask of a photo. I wouldn't have asked that question when I was young. But, as looking back, I would ask it now. But let me talk a little bit about the line, we are told the poem must show.
Please do.
Not say. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I believe that. That is a quote, "The poem must show, not say." That's a quote from T.S. Eliot. That was what he calls it, the objective correlative. And it actually means that rather than say something, you show it. And that way, and this is my further interpretation of what Eliot was talking about. When you show something and the reader reads it, now the reader is becoming part of the creative process. The reader sees the image that the artist or the poet has described. And the reader then will have an interpretation, maybe not exactly the same one the poet has, but it seems to me that's the idea. That's what's behind that line.
Well, I mean, yeah, and that lesson can be extended beyond poetry. I mean, one of the things we try to do here in my little news department, and I've told our reporter, you're less reporters than you are storytellers. You're not telling people things, you're showing them things. So that, you know, that was one of the surprising things as I went through Midwest Hymns, that there's so much that can be relatable beyond just poetry itself. You talk about your father, and that seems to be a bit of a through line, not in every poem, of course, but kind of beginning to end. I wonder, as you know, we get probably the one that really impacted me the most is toward the end, and that's in the examination room. Are we talking about the same man during that poem?
Yes.
I'll ask you. It's one. I'll ask you to read that one before we discuss it a little.
I will.
Further.
Thank you.
Yeah.
In the examination room, my brother and I hold him up to the scales, both sons, middle-aged, each bearing half his frail weight, whose measure will provide useless information to the waiting nurse, ready with digital tablet to record what regulations say are vital. The wall in front of him says he won't go much farther, while his frail gown waves senselessly at the floor. At what must have seemed to him a high step, he rises with two missing discs, determined to complete his assignment. What grace he owns shows in his face, looking as best he can from his stoop to whatever the future holds. We three are the ones who dug pulse holes in hard clay. One windswept June, looked from the rafters of the barn we built to a landscape we knew. We too spent evenings listening to his stories of the Pacific War. None of us know it, but he'll be gone day after tomorrow, and this is the last thing we'll do together.
Yeah. I'm sure so many people can relate to that. I did personally, because I saw a lot of your father and my grandfather, who was in World War II in the Pacific, and I was there for him in his final days a few years ago. Got a stomach ache, can't take food. Well, let's get you down to the doctor and see what's going on, not knowing that, you know, within the next 48 hours or so, this person was going to be gone. And just kind of the pride of the man. I remember being in the hospital room the night before he died, and all he just wanted to get up. He just wanted to stand up. And so that's what we did. Put him on his two feet and held him there. Really not still at that time thinking, you know, this person is indestructible. This person was in World War II. He had this long life. Nothing can defeat him. But in, you know, over time, obviously, is a predator that's going to eventually, you know, go in and make the kill. But you know, I guess of all the poems in the book, that one stuck with me the most. And I have a real appreciation for that one in particular.
Now, let me, I'll talk a little bit about the poem. This is about my father, my brother and I. This is an actual event that occurred. As you can tell, it's a little later on. Yeah, it's closer to, you know, we're in 2024. So, you know, it's closer to this time because there's a digital pad that's referred to in the poem. But one of the things that I think about, particularly in regard to this one, but there are others, you know, the poet has the writer, the poet has to decide what to put in the poem and what to leave out. Sometimes what to leave out is as important as what to put in. In this particular poem, you know, it's the lines are, you know, it's a single verse. And so, frankly, I just focused in on the event. There were other things I, you know, there are other things going on either in, you know, in either in the hospital or otherwise. I didn't focus on those. I just focused on the event itself. And I do think that the meaning, the value of this poem extends well beyond to, well beyond myself. I think it extends generally to the kinds of things that people face with their own loved ones and that will eventually face themselves.
Well, yeah, and talking about, you know, my personal situation, you know, reading something like this, it really drives, this is universal, or at least close to universal for a lot of people who go through, who can relate to this particular kind of circumstance. A short break for us now. This is the KGOU Readers Club. I'm managing editor Logan Layden. The book is Midwest Hymns, and the author is Dale Cottingham, who's with me for the hour. We'll be back after a short break. It's the KGOU Readers Club. I'm Logan Layden. The author is Dale Cottingham. He is the author of Midwest Hymns, this book of poetry that we are discussing this hour. And you really capture the sort of emotion of the moment. And there's a certain poem, I think it's called Roadside Dump, that's when as I go into this, not knowing that much about poetry, not really having a big appreciation for it, again, just because of lack of exposure to it. When you read Roadside Dump, what I take away from it is poetry is a lot about taking in the moment, sort of, you know, things that other folks would just pass by nonchalantly, stopping to really soak that in. I mean, this poem is about a garbage dump on the side of the road. Well, you might drive by that every day on your way to work. But do you ever stop, look real closely at it, try to think about the stories behind the toy truck that's sticking out of the pile? If you could speak to that a little bit, and heck, why not just read that poem in particular? As someone who's trying to...
I will. This is an even longer poem. This does come, the genesis of this poem is essentially this: living out in the country, like I did when I was growing up. There, you know, in those days, there was not county waste disposal. So people burned their trash. We burned ours. But then there were all these roadside dumps on the side of the road. And this is essentially about one of those roadside dumps. So let me read it. Mm-hmm. Roadside dump. Here in the center of immensity, it seems an afterthought. My derelict collection. One signpost of my morning walk. Substance of a composition made more ludicrous by sunlight and vast overlow hills. This June morning, heavy with moisture, portending rain, a roadside dump the size of a two-room cottage. I studied the bewildering intricacy of sloth with new eyes, the heap spent, broken, dirt-covered, yet vaguely luminous, like pages in an album of scenes you've forgotten in a closet, an entire aesthetic of failure. The child's bike, surely once shimmered in a garage, treasured, written in the 4th of July parade, whose bent front wheels makes a permanent three-quarters moon, spokes protruding like pins in air, a ripped trash bag revealing a collage of shirts and dresses. Here, Morello, the color of dewberries. There, a green fading to yellow, like leaves exhausted by August. Nearest to me, a toy truck, peeping optimistically from the heap, despite its crushed bed, like a dream I wake from shaking. Through its encrusted dirt, I read the industrial stamp, Taiwan. A detail I would have missed before art taught me to focus on all around me. Wind swimming through grass, billowing like waves or layered sand, rock, clay, the rigid brittle interfaced with the giving, exposed by the road cut, revealing a history I walk on, or dust suspended on a windless August evening, glinting, gleaming, levitating over a field. Attention finds mystery and beauty enough for any mortal, even in the mid-continent, a flyover place for many, lacking great cities and mountain vistas, offering only these low and lower undulations, hills and grasses, where I see a vast page waiting art, poetry in the dazzling morning haze, and in mounding debris, where a lexicon of desire and loss may be shoved out the back of a pickup some summer night, lightening the load and making history anthropological strata, my road cuts through this morning under expanding light, sun glancing off dewy grass, off the dump like jewels, reflected, refracted, gleaming browns, mauves, a multitude of skin colors, a result of chance or destiny, either way, a fabulous disarray.
A fabulous disarray. You know, you get all that from just stopping, looking, taking in a big pile of trash, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. In this particular poem, I took those memories as a child and I projected them into a present day walk. The poem rings true because these things that we walk by all the time, they have histories, they have stories they can tell us. There's another aspect of this poem that I find interesting because it relates to some of the things I'm working on now, which is, to me, a lot of people, including myself, we tend to make allegory of the land. We tend to make stories of the land, things we tell ourselves. Whether they're true or not, they are things we tell ourselves. And they're inspired or invoked by the land we live in, where we find ourselves, whether in this vast prairie we live in here in Oklahoma or in the mountains or near the ocean. The land we tend to make an allegory out of. And I got to tell you, Logan, that is really an ancient idea. It's inspired, for example, all the way back to Homer. In his Iliad and Odyssey.
Well, tell you, as you know, we had a brief conversation, you know, the night before we had this interview for about 5 minutes. It's a little bit odd to come in here and have this conversation because I feel like after reading Midwest Hymns, I feel like I kind of know you a little bit or gotten to know you through it. How much of you is in this when you're talking about, some poems related to digging post holes and various other, are these things that you personally did? How much of this is actually a reflection of your own childhood, early life, later life?
I got to tell you, Logan, the things in this book, whether it's digging post holes or putting up a pole barn or standing dad up to get weighed at a hospital 2 days before he died, all of it happened. And it became poems for me. In my view, many people, I don't know if everyone, but many people, they live their lives and on some level, they feel poems in their life. And whether or not they articulate them or they work on that craft, they still feel poetry.
Well, yeah, there's something to be said for not letting these little moments go by without appreciating them and documenting them in a way, in this case, poetry, even down to some of the simplest things. I mean, myself growing up here in Oklahoma, you know, I'm obviously attuned to the weather. There's one poem in here, a short one called After the Wind Shift. Where you're basically, you know, we have a cold front come through. All right, the temperature dropped. Big deal. When you read this, it's, yeah, we've felt that here in Oklahoma, the way things, it almost changes the attitude of the day and the people whenever the wind shifts. I hate to talk about them without actually having you share them with folks, and we're going to obviously read them all. That one's a pretty short one, but for anybody who's in Oklahoma, I think you can appreciate the fact that that change in the wind, you can let that go by unnoticed, not think too much about it, or as you did, contemplate that change, emotionalize it. If you could share that one with us.
Yeah, let me read the poem.
Yeah.
Then I can talk a little bit about it. After the wind shift, how cool the air. From the glowing fields, weed like tiny hands reaching skyward as they must in silence in morning sun, the road dividing the sighing grasses with a supple bend. Standing beside me, your keen face, brightening, wearing your cotton shift, white, breezy as our conversation, dew on the grass, and a clear, level light gracing the early hour. And, the wind shift, we all, like you say, we all experience it. And there's a feeling, at least I get, I don't think that it's just me, but there's a feeling I get, particularly when, you know, like there's a wind out of the north and it's a clear day and it may be a little cooler, maybe not frigid like we get in January, but, a little cooler. You kind of have that upturned face, a brighter outlook, a clearer outlook. And this poem was inspired by that.
Well, yeah, and it certainly it comes across. I think for people particularly who grew up in either in Oklahoma or sort of in the Midwest, there's a lot that as you read through Midwest hymns that sort of strikes you a little bit and you sort of recognize that. It's the difference between, a cold front came through and stopping to appreciate that moment. And absolutely. Some of them, like with your father and situations that people can personally relate to, even down to the weather, come across. Some, I have the author of the book with me here, I would like further explanation on. And maybe that's not what poetry is all about. Maybe you're supposed to interpret it for yourself. One in particular was really early on in the book, which was actually, I believe it's the it's called No One's Fault. And that I would like a little bit more explanation on, as far as what the heck is even on here. Read it and then tell me about it. Yeah.
Okay. Let me read this poem, then I'll tell you about it. No one's fault. It wasn't her fault. She fell running across the open space. Knee bleeding, she wouldn't get picked for the team. None of us understood, of course. We had no words for this. I've read that on Earth, our breath is a sally, that we are not our own deliverance, which seems right after all. What she did was unbutton her cotton dress, facing us unbidden in her white panties, inventing the strangeness of the other in our eyes. Now, Logan, that comes from one of my earliest memories at school. We were in grade school, and we were playing on the playground, and there was a girl, and this happened. And so that memory resulted in a poem. And this couplet, I've read that on Earth, our breath is as soughing, that we are not our own. That portion of that couplet, I've read that on Earth, our breath is as soughing. That comes from a poet, Levine. I'll remember his first name probably a little bit later, but at any rate, he won the Pulitzer Prize, I'm going to say about 20 years ago. But he had a line in one of his small poems about breath as is as soughing. It's that sense of there's a mourning, there is something anguished in the breath.
I guess I'm a little bit proud of myself, because as I read that, that's what first occurred to me, is this must be from a memory from school of seeing a girl either at some sort of tryout or something fall and seeing sort of her dreams dashed in that moment.
We were in grade school.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like second grade or something. So.
Well, why did she... why'd she take her clothes off after?
I don't know. I have no idea. No, I was there with I had friends then. And I was there with a couple of my friends, and that's what she did. I don't know why.
Just maybe just owning it, I suppose.
But the reaction, my recollection is, my reaction was, when I say in the poem that she created the strangeness of the other in our eyes,
yeah,
it was like that. It was like, I'm watching this, I really don't understand it. It's other. It's it's not what I would do, but it's what happened.
That also makes me wonder, just as we get back to just sort of your sort of personal incentives and why you wanted to put this book together and why you became a poet. Obviously you didn't do it in that moment, whenever that event was happening. When did you become a poet? Take me kind of through the evolution of how that happened. Obviously you weren't doing it when you were 5 years old, at least not.
Yeah, that's true. with me, I think I've alluded to this a few minutes ago, but with me, my real introduction to serious poems occurred when I was in college at OBU. Mm-hmm. And that stuck with me. And so I started my journaling. I did some journaling back during the 80s. I graduated college in 1979. Did some journaling during the 80s. But then I turned my attention in a rather serious fashion to poems and writing poetry in the early 90s. What I did, frankly, was I took in a serious literature class in college. And so I went back and I did some reading. I probably read for about a year in my, my off hours, my spare time. And I read in a serious fashion. And then I started writing some poems in the middle 90s. It wasn't until I think 2002, 2003 that I published my first poem. And the book came together. This book, even though it was published in 2023, the manuscript was actually put together in large part, I would say 4 or 5 years before then. But then, you know, it actually came together as a manuscript to start circulating around probably in 2016. Hmm. So it took a little time to get a publisher to publish the book.
The book is Midwest Hymns, and the author is Dale Cottingham. We'll be back after a short break. It's the KGOU Readers Club. The book, once again, Midwest Hymns. Well, and I have to assume, I mean, you didn't start writing poetry to be able to put out books and you know, make money and stuff and things like that. You did it because it was something that you wanted to do that was personal to you. Can you speak just a little bit to what poetry has done for you in your life since you've been doing it? How has it enhanced it?
I got to tell you, Logan, an important part of my life has been exploration. Now, I'm not a very risky person. I mean, I'm a lawyer after all, right? So I'm not, a certain level, you could say I'm not a very risky person. However, there is the life of the mind. And with that, I have always felt that I want to continue to think. I want to continue to explore. I want to continue to stimulate the mind. And poetry has become a vehicle to do that very thing.
You continue to this day, I would assume. You're still...
I do.
Writing poetry.
I'm fairly regimented about it. I work on poems early in the morning. Then I go exercise, come to work. I will set aside about an hour, if possible, during lunchtime to work on poems. And then I'll work on poems later at night before I go to bed.
In this book, Midwest Hymns, what would be like the most modern one? Like, which, as you go through this book, which was the one that was the most recent in it?
Yeah, I can tell you what it is. This is actually, it's actually an award winner. It's called A Moral Life. It's on page 72. Mm-hmm. That was one of the last, it may have been the last poem I wrote to put in the book. At this particular time when I wrote this, I was reading a lot of John Ashbery's poems. So there's a little bit of Ashbery in terms of how the poem is structured, even though really, you know, the poem is mine.
This is almost, and this particular one, Swan Dive, is the one you're referring to.
No, it's A Moral Life. Oh, but Swan Dive is also a later poem as well. Yeah.
Well, Swan Dive seems to me, it's a poem about poetry?
It is.
Yes.
It's actually a poem about poetry. It's about I'll just read the first line.
Yeah,
Swan
do.
dive, look at me with these nouns, mounting verbs, and it goes from there. And so it's about me with my journal open. And, you know, I've got these, you know, I have words, a lexicon of words to deal with.
And that would have been, so these kind of final poems for Midwest Hymn, do you have an idea, like, about what year was that? The book came out in 2023, right?
Right. Yeah, these poems, yeah. Moral Life and Swan Dive were written, I want to say, in about 2016. Hmm. So they were right when putting the manuscript together.
Huh. Well, obviously you've done more since then. Do you have future plans for more publications?
Yeah, I've got another, I have another book in circulation. It's called A Plural Land. I'm trying to get a publisher interested in publishing it. It contains, I'll just tell you, Logan, it contains really, in my judgment, an outstanding poem. It's called The Lamentation of Reverend Buttrick. This is a guy who, he was a Methodist minister. He moved to Tennessee in 1836. He traveled with the Cherokee on the Trail of Tears and wrote a journal. That journal is now in the Harvard Library. I got a copy of the journal, not the journal itself, of course, but I got a copy of the journal, and I wrote this poem. The poem is about 8 pages long. It's the one that New Millennium chose as the 2019 poem of the year. And so it's part of this manuscript I have circulating called A Plural Land.
Well, I got much more appreciation for poetry through reading Midwest Hymns. And also I feel like I said earlier, through the process of it, I feel like I, you know, kind of got to know you, even though we don't know each other much at all. So certainly be looking forward to your future work. Sounds like there's going to be more to come.
I look forward to this manuscript getting published. I'm hoping it will. At any rate, I will say this, that when you write poetry, you reveal yourself. You just can't help it if you're going to do it seriously.
Well, and it also, you know, I wonder if maybe I might take a crack at it myself at some point. Because, you know, I do have a better appreciation, I think, from this. I want to make sure that folks that are listening can have an idea of, you know, we don't sell books. This is public radio. I tell people to buy things. But if you were interested in Midwest Hymns, how do you go about getting a hold of it, would you say?
I would look up the website for Kelsay Books.
Mm-hmm. That's
They're
the
publisher of the volume. And so in my mind, the chat we had over this last hour was, I think, I thought it was terrific.
Well, and that's a good way to put it, too. Intimidated by poetry. I think that's the thing that's been kind of holding me back from it, because I feel like I don't understand it. It's the same with art. You know, you can give me 2 paintings, and I can't tell you why this one's good and this one isn't good. But maybe it's really not, you know, necessarily about that. It's such a personal thing, both art and poetry. Maybe it's not good or bad. Maybe that's up to the individual. I don't know. Yeah. This is things that I haven't really thought a lot about.
There is bad poetry.
Yes, certainly. Yeah, yeah. But being able to tell yours is not bad poetry, I think I know at least enough to be able to say that. Yeah, quite the opposite, in fact. Well, have a good rest of your day doing lawyer things, and then get back to writing more poetry, which I think is probably...
Well, I will. Yeah. Logan, I hope... my next book comes out soon, mm-hmm. and when it does, I'm going to make sure that I contact you. We'll see if we do this again.
Absolutely. I'd love to. Very good. Well, I appreciate you spending some time with me today. And again, it was a real pleasure to read your poetry, to get to know you a little bit through the process of it, and for myself, gain a better appreciation for poetry, yes, but also for kind of taking in the moment.
Thank you.
Well, this has been the KGOU Readers Club. I'm Logan Layden, managing editor for KGOU, the author of Midwest Hymns. Dale Cottingham has joined me for the past hour. We appreciate him giving us the time. More to come each month from the KGOU Readers Club throughout 2024.